Hello, you're listening to Leadership at the Edge, and I'm your host, John Williams. I welcome you to our monthly podcast show, sharing ideas across the community of leadership practice in every context, everywhere. We invite you to join the conversation via LinkedIn using the hashtag Leadership at the Edge, and don't forget to subscribe to us via Spotify for future episodes. Today, I'm joined by Bobby Davis, a qualified executive coach with extensive experience in organizational development, business change, from the people angle, and personal leadership. Described as a warrior with a maternal instinct, Bobby is fierce in her commitment to supporting others to create new habits and live more fulfilled lives at work, home, and play. Bobby's life and leadership experiences emerged against a backdrop of 30 plus years working in the British Army, not-for-profits, membership services, and most recently, hospitality. And most impressively for me, Bobby is committed to every day being a learning day. Bobby, welcome.
Thank you very much. And it's lovely to meet you.
It's absolutely great to have you on the show. Thank you very much indeed. And obviously what we want to do is to hear about you here. So can we begin, I think, Bobby, by just exploring your own leadership journey and the factors that were a foundation for your success, really? Just share some insights and what influenced you on your route to where you are today.
Ooh, where do I start? I was thinking about this because thankfully some very kind person gave me some idea of the things that you were going to ask. And I was thinking about this and I guess my journey starts with my parents, actually. My parents were teachers, but my dad in particular was very much about never writing anyone off. Always digging for skills. Not so much in the academia world. And I think that that set me up incredibly well, joining the army and meeting people from all walks of life. I had to learn a lot about football, but that taught me a lot about really knowing your people, knowing your soldiers, knowing what made them tick. And the great thing about the military is that it is a family, it is an institution, but you're not just managing or leading your soldiers. You are part and parcel of that whole integral piece with their lives, their families, whatever makes them tick, to make sure that they could be doing the best job possible. And I think that that was the start for me of something that I've kept with me the whole of my life, whatever job I've actually had. So yes, 10 years in the military. I make it sound incredibly rosy. It wasn't always, and we might want to get into that. But I learned lots, a great deal, which, as I say, was fundamental to what then happened next. I have then built a career mostly in leadership positions. I went from manager to director within a very short space of time of leaving the military, within sort of like 2.5-3 years, early 30s, having a baby in amidst all of that as well. And so was very self-taught. And I think that whilst that all sounds really super, I think that I felt like a fraud quite a lot during that first 8 years or so, in that journey. And so there was an awful lot of learning about not being wholly self-reliant, asking for help, saying when you didn't know how to do something. So as a result of that, you know, from a slightly hard knock, I think I came back even stronger and knowing much more about myself. And so spent 12 years in two big housing groups, learning my trade, but realizing that whilst the bread and butter of HR is something that I can do, how organizations tick as a result of people has always been my passion. So it may well be that since then I've been going in and looking at a process or looking at performance, but it's always about, you can put systems in, you can put policies in, you can put processes in, but when it comes to the interaction with a human being, you're not quite sure what might happen next. So that's so that, you know, it was a sort of like a game of three halves, really. There was the military, there was the military piece, there was the bit of doing a lot of very HR pure, and then more recently organizational development alongside my coaching qualifications, which have come to bear and also have me where I'm at now, saying I am an everyday learner, because every day is different and I quite like doing it, and I quite like that being the case. So I think that there is some of the key things for from a lot of the years that I've spent on Earth.
Oh, no, that's excellent. And that's very interesting, because that's an excellent exposition of your career, but also has a sort of logical linearity to it in a way. Can we just, in a sense, we go back towards the beginning, and you mentioned the, you know, 10 years make it sound like all roses, and it wasn't. Can you tell us a little bit about how that experience set you up for particularly your people engagement and your people ethos later on in your career?
Yes. So I think that Bridget, who is my my partner in crime on the podcast that we actually have, she and I started out together, and we do refer to ourselves a little bit as female trailblazers, because the time that we joined the military was when the Women's Royal Army Corps was being disbanded.
Right.
So we were joining the British Army.
Yeah.
And standing up alongside our male peers to do the same things. So we were in this era where they were attempting to work out whether we could all do the same things, and whether we could carry the same amount of weight, run the same amount of distance in the same, all of that. So we were slight guinea pigs, but it's interesting. I mean, if I look back now, you had no idea. What I do know when I first started off was that we were a little bit, I'll say, no person's land rather than no man's land, because people were still trying to work out how this was all going to fit together. So I had a horrendous first boss who on my first day, I was so excited about joining, and my first introductory interview, he told me that he hated graduates and he hated females even more.
Wow.
So as a female graduate, get ready for the first for the most miserable years of my existence, or words to that effect.
Yep.
And he wasn't far wrong.
Right. Okay.
And did he nearly break me? Yeah. There were days when I thought that he might.
Yep. But he didn't, though.
But he didn't.
Yeah.
Because I think, and although I swayed back into that level of self-reliance once I'd left the army, I found people who really cared, who would look after me, who would teach me, and tried to steer clear from him as much as possible. And I did find people who were very supportive. I think the other thing was that I knew what I was beginning to learn what I was good at and what I needed help with. So I remember some of those first early days with my first troop saying to them, look, I can write good reports. I will do all I can to get you promoted into your next rank if I think you're good enough.
Yeah.
What I need are the words about all of this communication stuff that we're doing and how the wiggly amps and the technical stuff work to make it sound like I know what the hell I'm doing when the big bosses come to play.
so that
was the deal.
But
I think it taught me again that you're a team. I mean, and it was phenomenal from that perspective, because they really did look after me because they knew that I cared about them.
Carry on.
No, I just think that was the fundamental. But I think the other thing that I was going to say, if I may, was that the learning of balance between your masculine and feminine energy, because I think whatever your gender, there is that balance within that.
Yep.
And I learned quickly that sometimes people wanted me to play on feminine wiles and batting my eyelashes because I might get away with murder or get what they actually wanted for the team. Yeah. So I was a bit like, I'm not sure what I think about this, but if it's going to get me a helicopter or an aeroplane or whatever, I might be willing to do it.
Yep.
But equally, they also wanted me to deal with the crying female soldier because they didn't know how to. And I know that I often went in a little bit hard on them because I didn't want us to be perceived like that. So I think those are the two key things for me that I was learning.
That's really, really interesting. Pick up on the first one, first, if you like, the idea of the team. One of the principles I often think about is that the smallest unit of effectiveness in an organization is a team, because no individual can actually make things happen on their own. Do you think your experience seems to indicate that actually it's not just in the organization that one needs a team, it's actually in one's life, if you like, in one's self-fulfillment, it actually takes people around one to enable us to do that. Am I right in thinking that?
Absolutely,
And it works both in
absolutely.
team and in life.
I absolutely believe in that. My family is everything to me, and we are the strongest team. And coming together like that, again, we're a blended family. I was a stepmother aged 26 of two children who were 10 and 8 at the time. They are well into their 30s now and have lived to tell the tale. Because I didn't at the time, whilst I say it, a warrior with a maternal instinct, that maternal instinct took some time to come because I was a soldier and I'd suddenly become a mum because my husband was a widower. So I was it. But he and I were a great team in the first instance, learning about how we were going to work as a family unit. And then we have our own daughter as well. So we did learning to drive and learning to walk at the same time and teens and toddlers at the same time. But we are a strong team and and the family, but your friendship, the being in community with other people. I am a strong believer in that it takes a village, but it takes a community when you're learning. So I always go and find the community that I actually need to help me gain my fulfillment in life.
Excellent. Oh, absolutely excellent. And just picking up on you mentioned that you went from manager to director, with parent in the middle there in a very short space of time, just a few years actually. And you said it was quite interesting. You said you felt sometimes like a fraud, and I suspect that nobody in a leadership position has managed to escape without feeling like a fraud sometime or other. Because am I right in thinking, first of all, there's no playbook for leadership in a way? We can learn all sorts of stuff from books and things like this. Actually, we're all winging it to a degree. Am I right in thinking that? I mean, is that how you would see some of this?
Absolutely. I have winged motherhood, the military, and leadership, and everything in between. I find in life, or I found, and it's taken me, well into whatever decade. Well, I'm in my 50th years now, but it's taken me probably into my 40s to realize that it's that much easier when you say it out loud that you're winging it and that you don't always know. But those days of trying to be perfect as a mother and learning to be a leader, and finding that I was cocking both up on a daily basis was horrible. And especially when you're trying to make out that you've got it all sorted and you know exactly what you're doing. And that was painful and exhausting. And the days that I stopped doing that, and I still have days like that when I really want to be much better at something than I actually am. The days when I accept more about my limitations or that I am in a learning mode and or whatever it might be are much easier and much less tiring.
Well, this is great. This is very honest, clearly, and it's nice to hear somebody in a leadership position who's prepared to be that honest. I remember thinking we should all have a T-shirt that says "I have no idea what I'm doing" and wear it all the time at work, really. How do you, how much has your experience given you that resilience? And it sounds like a stupid question, because we can only develop resilience, I think, through experience. But have there been particular elements of your experience through life that have really solidified and enabled you to bring that resilience to the fore when you need it?
So I think if I hark back, this is when I was at Sandhurst. And I broke my ankle in the first term when I was in training. And Sandhurst isn't something that you want to stay at in training any longer than you have to. And I knew when that break came that I might be back termed and I might have to stay even longer than I wanted to. And the other thing that played into that as well was that, you know, the word jock that we hear about, the people who are so I was a little bit a part of a jock girl gang when I first arrived at Sandhurst. You know, the people who were meant to be pretty good, they were popular with the directing staff. I mean, this is not necessarily my perception, but definitely the stories I've heard from others. And I couldn't be that anymore with a broken ankle. And the idea of being back termed, and it made me really humble. And I saw my report recently, and there is a definite step change in my report from being a bit cocky to actually showing my level of determination, because I didn't want to be there any longer than than I had to be. And I think that that was quite life affirming. If I think of another one, was when there was a job that was going slightly wrong. This is when I was quite senior. I was senior on a senior team, but my face wasn't fitting. And I guess I was acting out a little bit because I knew that it was happening. Again in that mode of I'm fighting for my job here, but I'm not doing it the best way possible. So in another moment, there's the determination, but on that occasion, I completely imploded like a pulpy mess that had just exploded in a microwave.
Right.
And had to rebuild out of that. But I think I learned that there are things that can have you down on the floor and out, broken in both cases. And then it's a case of what you do next.
Right. So this, first of all, I couldn't agree more. And secondly, how do you think that we can inculcate that kind of going from I can do this to suddenly discovering I can't do this, I need to work very hard to be able to do this? How can we inculcate that kind of bounce back in the people whom we lead, if you like?
So I really hope that people who I have managed and led would say that I have been that person for them. I urge people to find people who will push them and will help them find that edge, and even be the people in their corner saying, you might not have realized that you could do this, but I believe that you can. And so there are people who've worked for me who've often said, are you completely insane asking me to do whatever it might be? It's like turning my recruitment and L&D managers into HR generalists overnight during COVID, and then going, you are nuts. I was going, I'm not, I'll help you. You can do this. Yep. And they did. So I think it's being that person for them. I don't rescue.
Right.
I guide. I will talk about my experience. I will be honest about when I've got it wrong and what I've learned from them, because I think that that makes it safer for people. If people know that you haven't got it all together and you're completely perfect, it's just not true. Some of the most horrendous things that have happened to me have been the things that I've learned the most from. But I try very hard as a leader to say to people, this is really uncomfortable, but it won't be forever. But whilst you're in the discomfort, there is probably something really brilliant to learn. So just hang out there, and I'll hang out there with you.
Excellent.
And I think that that's from my own experience. That's what I like to believe, or I hope that's what I commit to supporting others.
I think that's a tremendous, not just a tremendous attitude, a tremendous approach. Because I like the phrase, I don't rescue. Because I remember somebody saying to me once that the way to help people out of a hole is not to get down in a hole with them. And that's exactly what you're exemplifying. Actually, talk them out of the hole, if you like, really. Give them that confidence and stuff. That's absolutely great. I remember also something, I'll just tell you this quickly. We were having a conversation and we were talking about qualities we wanted in employees. And one of them was loyalty. And I said, well, how do you test for loyalty? And quick as a flash, one of the team said, torture. I thought, oh, well, that's one way to test loyalty. Brilliant.
I believe that, and I think in the trust element as well, that some of the things that I have asked members of my team to do, I wholly believe that they must have trusted me to think that this was going to be okay, because they've given me that look a lot of the time, and then gone, okay, well, if you think so, and I'm like, I don't think so, I know so. And I haven't been surprised, because I'm absolutely sure. And I really want people to just see what they are capable of, whether that's me managing them, mentoring them, or coaching them, which I see quite distinctly. But that's always the commitment I have. Like, come on, let's give this a go. What's the worst that can happen?
And that's so you, because looking at your websites and things, your ethos is around helping people to become fulfilled, not just to do a job or whatever it is, but actually to feel fulfilled, which is tremendous. And in your own podcast, More Than a Lumpy Jumper, you cover topics that range from motherhood all the way to the military. How have those experiences that you've had shaped your perspective on leadership and what you think leadership is, and not just how you can help other people achieve it?
So it goes a little bit back to that not having the playbook, you know, the learning, the learning as you go along. I think it's the learning as you go along. I think the other bit that plays into it, which was very much about a change in myself, I think. If I think back to where I was and my experiences, both in the military and potentially what I was like at school, I was quite armor plated. I was quite hard. I didn't really let people know what was going on. And then somewhere within that military motherhood leadership, I started along the route of my self-development and learning to coach. And in learning to coach, you get coached. And I let the armor plating down a bit. I got much better, if, as we're hopefully hearing in this recording, about saying when I got things wrong and allowing myself to be that little bit more vulnerable. I think it transformed my relationship with my youngest, who it's never been a bad relationship, but she's very like me and pretty feisty. So as a teenager, I was like, oh my God, here's me meeting myself coming back in the other direction. But realizing about how I had been dealt with, you know, as a teenager versus life moving on and there being something else. And she equally teaches me so much, because there was a new handbook to be had with her. And there are new handbooks to be had as we go through the demographics. There are new handbooks to be had with whoever it is that we're actually working with. Everybody has a different story to tell, so the handbook's different every day. And I think that that's what I have learned. And that's what I hope that the podcast is showing, that with going through all sorts of gnarly topics, we could come back to the same topic again and it would be different the next time that we introduced it, because there's always something new to learn, and just being very open to that.
Yeah, this was it. They say you can't step into the same river twice. It's moved on and things like that. Yeah, excellent. Clearly, communication is an enormous element of your success in engaging with people. We can hear it in this podcast, the way that you communicate, your ability to communicate very complex concepts in intelligible and straightforward ways. Can you share something of your insights on the importance of communication and curiosity and compassion and things in leadership? Because I know they're all important to you.
So, well, I'm a storyteller. I love telling a story. And I often lead with stories to enable relationship building. I am equally interested in other people's stories. So, as well as having a lot to say for myself, and I can be a complete chatterbox, I am a good listener, a good active listener. And I believe in telling my story, I hopefully create a space to allow other people to tell theirs, knowing that they can say whatever they like and they won't be judged. They can trust me with the information. And whilst it's a bit like we'll never have been in the same river, I might have been in a similar current to them. So that we can then talk about experience. And again, that's not the rescuing or telling what to do. It's going, that's the compassion piece of, I know something of your story. Yeah. It's yours, but I know something about it. So I think, and I'm just forever interested in people. I drive my family mad because, you know, we'll go away on a holiday and my husband will go off to get a drink and he'll come back and I'm talking to somebody. It's like, oh my God. Or my daughter, when we were working in London together, I'd start chatting to people on the tube and she's like, that just doesn't happen. But I'm inordinately interested in people and their stories. And I think that, you know, that's, I hope that that's part and parcel of my success, be it, you know, in any environment, in any situation, just being curious about how people tick, and what intrigues them and what lives are like.
This is excellent. How well do you find people respond to that curiosity, not just on the tube, but, you know, in work, if you like, in work situations?
Yeah. For the most part, I think people like it. I remember very early doors after I'd left the army, and I'm no different than I was then, just, you know, a little bit longer in the tooth. But I remember somebody saying to me, oh my God, are you always so upbeat? You're really irritating. So I'm not, I'm probably not everybody's cup of tea, you know, and I also had a wonderful boss, but very much an introvert, who would eventually say, "You're tiring me out," and he would shoo me out of his office like a pigeon, but in this sort of amusing way. So that I do appreciate that sometimes, and I'm learning much more about this with my, you know, level of self awareness. That every now and again I need to take it down a notch, but for the most part, people who want to work with me will come and say, we need your energy. We need what you bring out in people. And so I do find it, let's say 98-99% wanted. And there's a small percentage who's like, oh God, here she comes. You know, just all, you know, put your seatbelts and helmets on. What's she planning on doing today? So I do appreciate that. Sorry, everybody.
But that, in a way, that's part of life's distribution curve, isn't it, really?
It is.
Some people will be at either end of that, that sort of stuff. And it's interesting because there's a principle in agile methodologies around self-organizing teams. And I often say to people, self-organizing teams don't. They don't. So you've got to actually provide momentum and stuff. And clearly, your personality is able to do that in teams, not just at the outset. Of course, when that energy starts to flag, and have you seen that as a pattern in some of the roles that you've played?
Definitely, and I don't think that there's any sort of like surprise in terms of the teams that I've worked with, the types of organizations that I have been in, who are looking for change.
Yep.
Equally, there's no surprise to some of the jobs I haven't got, because when they say, oh, we're really after transformational change, I will say to them in an interview, how much? And, you know, the next thing is I get the recruitment agency on saying, well, we thought you were doing really well. And then and then they've decided to go with somebody else. And I was like, no, and that's absolutely right, because I could sense that what I bought was going to be too much for them and what they were bringing was not going to be enough for me. And that's fine. That is absolutely fine.
Yep.
That the boss I was talking about, who shooed me out of his office like a pigeon, said that he'd brought me in to be a conscientious disruptor.
Oh, nice phrase.
And I was like, oh, wow. But he said, I want you to go in and say, why have you got a pink notebook rather than a blue one? Why this? Why that? And I want you to do that. And I think it was the first time that I truly embraced that that's what I'm like.
Right.
And so be what you are. So I am quite I am quite disruptive, and I know in other walks people will go, oh God, you know, she's got no control, she probably doesn't have a plan or anything like this. I often have a plan, but I am equally happy of getting in there and going, right, the plan has to go to one side, because what is needed right now is this, and that's what I'm going to do, because that's the best thing.
And that actually, I think, is what differentiates you, and what has been maybe the foundation of your success, is your willingness and ability to make change. Actually, your ability to focus on what change actually needs to be made. And right. And that is not universal amongst you know, managers, leaders, consultants, or whatever. I like that conscientious disruptor. That's lovely. That I shall remember that, because I often think, you know, I'm not dissimilar in a sense. I can do change. I can't do continuity. If you know, if people want a safe pair of hands, it's not me.
I always think, and of course, it's never just one or the other.
Yeah.
But I often think about implementers and maintainers.
Ah, right. Yes.
And I had a boss once who said, oh, if anything gets into maintaining ground, I will deliberately break something so I've got something to do.
Yes.
And I thought, God, I think that might be a little bit like me as well. So I think the other thing that I'd say that I know about myself is that I will often only stay in organizations long enough to have given something to somebody else.
Right. Right.
And
okay.
People are quite surprised by that. When they say, what, well, you'd willingly do yourself out of a job, and I'd say, well, yeah, because then that means that I've actually done a pretty good job if there's somebody else who can take it on from me. I read somewhere once about sending postcards. I thought, whatever does that mean? And it says the best thing for a leader to do is to be able to go on holiday,
right,
and be sending postcards, because your team have got it and they don't really need you there.
Absolutely. And right, our job's to make ourselves redundant.
I really believe that.
Well, Bobby, you know, I'm sure that we could listen to you for hours. I know I could listen to you for hours. And however, we've got to come to the end of this conversation sometime. Before we do, this is the inevitable top tip question at the end. So, what would be your top tip for people who are wanting to create new habits and live more fulfilled lives, whether at work or at home?
It's an easy one for me. Practice.
Oh, right.
So yeah. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I do is I'm a somatic coach, which is very much about utilizing your body and your body energy. The person who trained me, Richard Strozzi Heckler, always says it's 300 repetitions to know something bodily memory, but it's 3,000 repetitions for it to actually live in your body. So more often than not, we'll say, I know how to do something, but we'll only be using our head.
Right.
When in actual fact, for something to be a real habit, it needs to be bodily known. And if you think about that 300 to 3,000, 300, if you did it three times a day, it's going to take you 3 months.
Yep.
3,000, it's going to take you 3 years.
Wow.
So my top tip is, whatever it is that you want to get better at, whatever it might be, practice and start now.
What a great way to end, and what a great, clear, practical top tip. Bobby, thank you very, very much indeed. And that's it, everybody. Thank you for joining us today on Leadership at the Edge. Thank you in particular to Bobby Davis, our guest. It's been a great delight to have you with us, Bobby. Thank you. And thank you, of course, to the audience for listening. Catch up on all our podcasts, check out our latest events, and delve into lots of other content on our website at leadership.global. See you all next time.